Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Am I tough enough?
Strong and stable leadership.
Total rhubarb.
Hell yes, I'm tough enough.
Shut the fridge.
Not another one!
It's the Politics Show podcast.
Love podcast, hate Rolf Harris. It's the Politics Show podcast!
Woo!
Oh! One more in the ground, boys! One more in the ground.
Besides remorse, the swing continues.
Damn right. Ed Campbell, Politics Joe's politics producer. How are you, pal? You all right?
Good, yeah.
Cheers. How's that lager beer treating you?
Delicious.
Good. Ava Evans, Ava Santina, I should say.
Hi.
Our political correspondent. How are you?
Great. I see that Ed's enrolled in Teach First.
Yeah, some plug for... I got this at fourth year of university from a brand ambassador. And it's the only pen I own.
Someone thought you could be a teacher.
Yeah, probably. I could be a teacher.
Sorry.
Teach first, take anyone. There's like a crisis.
So. Yeah, even Rolf Harris.
maybe not. He's dead. That's the main obstacle.
How are we, guys? What have we been up to? You were out this morning, Ed.
I was out this morning.
What story were you working on?
There is a warehouse complex in the historic warehouse district in Haringey. It's like a creative, artistic community that is under threat from a new luxury housing development. So went and met the residents there, the artists there, who are trying to fight back against the developers. What's interesting is when you first hear that story, you think, well, that's NIMBYism. It's more interesting than that, because the luxury housing development will actually end up with fewer bed spaces than there's already in the warehouses themselves. So there's going to be people made homeless, people who have actually got really decent, cheap rent in these warehouse complexes that they kind of built themselves, this whole community. People were paying, I suppose someone was paying £600 a month, bills included. People were paying as little as £500, who would be asked to pay more than a grand a month for a luxury house, a luxury housing development. So it was interesting.
Well, no. I look forward to seeing the piece.
Yeah.
It's going to be good. And Ava, how about you? What have you been up to?
I went to the rally yesterday against the minimum service levels bill, which was in Parliament yesterday. So it was a rally against... It was an anti-strike rally.
A strike rally? Or
under this new bill, you won't be able to... You'll have to provide minimum services, which basically means you can't go on strike. You could lose your job if you go. Mm. It's pretty bad.
Yeah.
Who was down there? Who did you speak to?
Oh, just, you know, Nick Lynch.
The biggies.
He's like a proper celebrity to us, you know? It's like...
He's big time.
He doesn't have the gravitas, I don't think, with any other, like, group of people the way that he does with us.
Just, there's the three of us.
Yeah, the General Secretary of the Rail Union. Oh, my God.
He does have an aura, to be fair, when you meet him.
Yeah, that's for sure. He does. I mean, let's kick things off then. Man City have won the league. A victory for the beautiful game, one must admit it, and they're probably going to win the Champions League as well. I think that's...
And the FA Cup.
Fair to say. Oh yeah, it might be a treble. I mean, the ironic clap aside, first things first, you know, I watched that semi against Real Madrid, and the way it was just, the way they outgunned the Galacticos and the way they've done it, which is just remorselessly... buying the best manager in the world, the best players. I mean, probably what, 3-4 players in that team are the best players in the world? And just like, it's hard power, do you know what I mean, on the football pitch. And we'll get into this, but it serves a soft power purpose outside of that, doesn't it?
Yeah, no, it does. It's for all the plaudits Man City from footballing sense get and deserve for playing unbelievably well for 5 titles in 6 seasons. They're about to win a treble, unprecedented football success. But I do think you can't talk about Man City's success without the Abu Dhabi. It's Abu Dhabi, isn't it?
Yeah, it's the UAE.
Yeah. Without Abu Dhabi's involvement, because all the they couldn't. I really doubt they'd be able to get Guardiola, all the best players in the world, all the best training facilities. They've created like a perfect laboratory for the crystallization of like perfect football. Like their dominance. No one's surprised by this. No one thinks, looks at Man City over the past decade and thinks, oh wow, they're going to win a Champions League and a treble. This is going to what? That's surprising. It seems inevitable.
Mm. The thing that the most obvious thing people complain about is the financial doping side of things, right? 115 charges, and that'll get litigated over in, you know, the coming days, weeks, months. But the more obvious thing is the UAE,
yeah.
Right? You know, it's a country which literally, you know, has child slaves. I've written about this a long time ago now for Joe, but you know, the Sheikh Mansour, the deputy prime minister of the UAE, who owns Manchester City, his brother is a guy called Sheikh Issa. There's a video, 45-minute long video of him torturing a man in the desert, beating him with a wooden plank that has nails sticking out of it, using a cattle prod on his nutsack, pouring salt in his open wounds, shoving dirt in his mouth, eyes, ears, running over him. Right, I've watched it, so you don't have to.
Thank you.
You probably could have just said the top three.
Yeah. Yeah, probably. But long story short, there's a video of the brother of the Prime Minister torturing a man, right? And you'll be pleased to hear that the authorities in the UAE, they did hand out a custodial sentence for these offences, but it didn't go to Sheikh Issa for torturing the man. It went to the man who leaked the videotape for blackmailing for blackmailing the Sheikh, they said. You know, the human rights abuses are plenty. I mean, what? Homosexuality is illegal. Mm. It's criminalised. There's a very similar conversation about women's rights in the UAE. And maybe I'll talk about this in a bit more detail in a minute, what they're doing in Yemen. You know, most people think about Saudi, right? And we should talk about Saudi as well, because they own Newcastle now. When it comes to Yemen, UAE is a very active partner in what's going on.
And you know who's a really active partner in that? The UK.
Yeah, for sure.
We yesterday it was actually, the figures came out, £8.5 billion in export arms sales. That's what we've contributed. And £2 billion of those go to Saudi, £2 billion go to Qatar. We are profiting from that massively. So it's not like a problem that's happening over there.
100%.
It's a problem that we are fully complicit in.
Really crucially as well, because that whole area, the Gulf of Arabia, the Sahel and also the Horn of Africa, in my opinion, is going to be the region which dictates global politics for the next 20, 30 years, primarily because of the climate crisis, drought in sub-Saharan Africa. There is going to be a massive swathe of refugees heading north into North Africa, trying to cross the Med. It's going to be a huge issue for Western Europe. That
and
is
an
coming.
Issue that's already actually started. There's a lot of study into Libya and the civil war that has been going on there. And that's one of the causes has been thought to be dry fields, agriculture completely dried up, people mm-hmm. moving to the cities. That meant that this huge mix of religions all were living together. And this, I mean, it's not the direct result, but that is a factor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, massively. And then you look at Oman, right, which is basically a British colonial outpost. It's run by a sultanate. It's an effective dictatorship. The British army, the navy specifically, is building a harbour in Oman, Duqm. It is for very specific reasons, because at the moment there is not a port east of the Suez Canal which can accommodate our Queen Elizabeth class aircraft carriers that we've just produced two of them, right? We are literally building our own port in Oman, in a place called Duqm. I've been there, to accommodate this aircraft carrier. And you might think, what on earth are we doing that over there? Very, very crucially, Oman sits opposite Iran on the Strait of Hormuz. It's a 33 mile wide bottleneck in those straits, where 40% of the world's oil passes through on tanker ships. And it is in our interests, specifically, to be able to put our aircraft carriers over there to protect that supply of oil that flows through the Suez Canal into the Med and all around the world. Because Iran, if it wanted to, if that area isn't policed, would be interested in possibly stopping that and, you know, affecting oil prices in that way. And there's this huge geopolitical game going on, particularly in relation to Yemen, between Saudi, UAE, all of those countries. I mean, to talk about UAE in particular, they are meddling in Yemeni affairs, right? They are ruthlessly and cynically getting themselves involved in the internal politics and a civil war inside a country to quite ruthlessly protect their own financial interests, because all of that 40% of the oil I was talking about, part of it comes from the UAE, right? Some of it comes from Saudi. But they are interested in securing all of the waterways along the Gulf of Arabia, the Horn of Africa, so that includes places like Somalia and Sudan, where they're also intervening. There is a colossal humanitarian crisis happening in Yemen right now, which in part is a result of the bombing campaign, which Saudi Arabia and UAE are undertaking, but is also in part to the brutal civil war there, where the UAE is backing factions in that war. And often, actually, at times, it's the detriment of the internationally recognized government, because there's so many factions there in this civil war that's going on. They are not nice guys. And I think you have to ask yourself, why are they interested in owning Manchester City? It's so that when you go, oh, the UAE, yeah, what, that Sheikh Mansour, oh, it's the guy that owns Man City. You don't go, oh, yeah, it's the guy that's backing the Southern Transitional Council in Yemen, who are destabilizing the internationally recognized government in the civil war against the Houthis. You know, it serves a purpose, and it's sports washing.
So we should give Manchester a free port, Brexit free port, yeah, 100%. To solve all of this?
Yeah, that'll sort it out. Sort it out. But go on, sorry.
I think that's what... You can understand football fans are not irrational people, because there will be Man City fans, hello if you're listening, that will have listened...
Turn off now!
That will have listened to all of what you've said, who on a really like base human level agreed that that's atrocious, but still would back the ownership of Man City to their teeth.
Have you seen Kevin De Bruyne play a fucking pass at it? Because it's worth it.
Like, it's
just let me talk.
It's so interesting, because I think this is such a unique cultural thing, that football inspires such just insane tribal loyalty. Mm. People defend players accused of heinous crimes like sexual assault. They're like, oh, well, innocent until proven guilty, which of course is true, but you don't need to defend them on Twitter, arguing with other like anonymous profiles.
You've just reminded me, I can't remember if it was a COVID-y time, but you and me went to Westminster to interview the Newcastle fans who were picketing for... They were like demanding a Saudi buyout.
They delivered a letter to Downing Street.
Yeah,
and that was interesting as well, because that was about the end of Mike Ashley owning Newcastle United, who Newcastle United fans for years felt very, well, rightly so, aggrieved by the ownership of Mike Ashley of Newcastle United, and they were so desperate for them to be rid of it. There wasn't like there. I think this speaks to the kind of what I was saying about the irrationality of football fans. There wasn't a critical like look at who the new ownership might be. It was, oh, thank God this is over, and you bastards in government are stopping us getting this new sick deal.
Is this anything new, though? And I don't think this just applies to sport, by the way. You know, I think there are other cultural global icons you can make this argument about. But I just, you know, are we deeping it a bit too much, or are we expecting too high a standard from people like Sheikh Mansour, no, but like Pep Guardiola, or you know, the Man City players, or if we wanted to talk about pop music, we could talk about Beyonce, right? We could talk about her, the Renaissance album. You went to go see her recently. A good time?
Yeah, not in Dubai. Where she... not that's not the smooth of the link as you think it would be. So we're talking about Beyonce was paid £24 million to play her album at the Atlantis in Dubai, the opening, and it was spectacular. No.
But
there was there was loads of pushback, and yeah, people were furious about this, because she is an artist that traditionally appeals to, you know, people of part of the LGBTQIA community, and this is, you know, in breach of that. But there was also actually quite a comical moment where she'd brought her daughter on stage with her, and her daughter started performing to, I think it was Cuff It, but in like doing this like particular dance that might be arguably too suggestive for the UAE.
How old's her daughter?
She must be like 10 or 11.
Yeah, but
she whacks her. She hits her on stage.
What?
She's like, what are you doing?
Stop
hits
it.
Her on stage.
Wow.
I think that episode highlights maybe the hypocrisy or the shades of grey in this, because Beyonce's latest album was really inspired by like queer culture.
It's dedicated to the black queer community, wasn't it?
It was her uncle.
Yes, and then it's about like ballroom culture and stuff like that, and it's very like you listen to it and it's like reminiscent of very like queer culture, but she didn't perform any of that in Dubai. So it's like she's playing both sides. She's like always sunnying it. It's like she's going and taking the dollar from the incredibly homophobic anti-LGBT community and also taking the dollar from the pro-LGBT, well, they're actually the gay people.
But can I make an argument that actually America isn't the most pro-gay community at times?
Not.
I mean, the evangelicals who are out there. And also, America is a nation where just a couple of years ago, we were seeing children from Mexico who had crossed the border being locked up in cages at the border. So what, should she not play? Also, this is a woman who released, you know, the single Formation, which was this huge jibe at Jim Crow and all of the racism that she has experienced in her own lifetime. Like, who are we to tell a black woman, well, you can't go and perform in the UAE because we're not sure about it?
I think there's a difference, though, between if she'd performed for Donald Trump. I think that's maybe a better comparison than the state.
But does she vet Republicans at the door?
I think you could. I think if you perform, I think there's maybe a limit to being like the average American who votes red. But if you performed for Ron DeSantis, then maybe that's a better comparison.
I think this is a really relevant discussion, because I think actually, if you were to go through the US is one of the biggest perpetrators of this. If you were to go through a list of countries where these artists tour and go, okay, so who actually does have an acceptable human rights record that like will be okay to play at? You'd struggle to find a country. You really would. The way that I'm talking about the UAE intervening in another country's foreign affairs. Newsflash: the US has been fucking doing that for a very, very long time. I think the point here for me is just why, like, don't get your politics from pop stars. You know, like, these people, their currency is fame. Their currency is currency. They're in this game for money. And like, if you want to be a successful recording artist in the States, that is what you have to think. That is what you have to say. I'm not saying that it's wrong to say that. I'm not saying it's wrong to think that. I'm just, my point of view is, don't take it as a sort of, you know, as a sincerely held belief. Because in reality, if an artist did think that incredibly sincerely, the places where they would go and play would be very, very small in number.
Well, you know who made that point, to bring it back to football, is Gary Neville. When he did Lunch with the FT, he was talking about how he'd gone over and reported on the... What was that big football thing you were all watching over there?
The World Cup.
The World Cup.
I like when you do this thing, and I think it's very funny because you do it so disingenuously because you know what the World Cup is. You do the real thing, like, what is this sports ball thing?
Everton home and away. Yeah. Everton home and away.
Like, what are you doing? I'm going to watch Everton with my dad. Like, what's my doing? I don't know what they're doing.
But yeah, no. I'm just there for emotional support, okay? You guys get so excited. My little game.
No, for sure. I mean, you're right to talk about the World Cup, right? World Cup in Qatar.
Yeah.
Everyone's talking about workers' rights, LGBT rights, women's rights. And, you know, the Qataris come back and say, well, show me another World Cup where there's been such low levels of crime, when there's been such low levels of assault. It's like, well...
Show me another World Cup where they'll chop your fucking hand off.
But the next World Cup is in America. A country with more mass shootings than calendar days.
No, don't make me laugh and then say something like that. Oh my
God.
You
were laughing at that.
They're like, the cut is just going to be me being like, yeah.
But I think also the Qatar World Cup is the people who went and engaged. I think that's like Gary Neville, when he got rinsed on Have I Got News For You for going and saying he was going to draw attention to it. But when I think of the Qatar World Cup, I don't think of the migrant workers. I think of Lionel Messi, which is exactly why. And I'm a moron, but I think that's like, that highlights exactly what they wanted. They want, when I hear Qatar, I don't think of like even the airline. I think oh, Lionel Messi. That's like the biggest association I have with it. And I think as well they have all this soft power generating from it. They have like it's not just to do with football and the media. Things like that. It's tourists. It's people who, like, they recruited lots of like content creators and YouTubers to go out.
Influencers,
and cover,
yeah.
To go, who could go to the matches and like decept. Remember Thogden did that stupid
Yeah.
It was like, I'm going to go to that every single World Cup match ever, and I'm going to be the first person to do that. And I didn't watch many of it because I'm in my 20s, but I think that's like a. The entire point of that, he didn't. I can't imagine he engaged critically with the migrant worker accusations, etc. I think he would say, "Oh, it's just football. It's just football."
You know, a whole bunch of journalists were invited over before they built the stadium and for the World Cup. to, like, they were invited by the country to be like, look at how fine it all is. And they were like, it was
like literally like falling off the top of buildings.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, it's just a word quickly on sort of like influencer culture and how that's being used to market these countries, because I've got no doubt you guys will have people you follow on Instagram who are like on a hotel rooftop in a bikini or a tiny pair of swim shorts being like living it up.
My Instagram,
you know.
Is.
I keep getting these targeted ads for all of this porn, and I don't know where it comes from.
I just watch it. Yeah.
But they're really smart with soft power, right? They understand the influencer economy and how to project their soft power in Western culture better than anyone. You know, you could look at what Saudi's doing with this like insane mirror city that they're building.
Neon.
Is that how you say it?
Well, it's all in capitals.
It's like an F1 city.
It's NEOM all in capitals. I don't like.
So that's how it's said.
Neon. It's tall, right? No.
It's tall.
Tall and thin and mirrored.
Yeah.
Wide. Is it long?
It's a long boy.
It's a long city.
Speaking of influencers, when I was in Bristol over the weekend, someone came up to me in a pub and was like, oh my God, are you Ava? And I was like, oh yeah, she's like from Politics Joe. She's like, oh my, yeah. And then anyway, she's like, do you know Ollie Duckmore? And I was like, yes.
What did you say?
I was like, yeah. And she was like, I loved his videos on Brexit.
That's tragic.
I know.
Here I am. Yeah, the Ollie Duckmore stands are a little bit tragic. Shall we move on? Shall we talk about something else? Because I feel really uncomfortable right now.
I think I'm going to compare Beyonce fans and Man City fans.
Here we go.
What's good about these countries co-opting these brands, if you think about them as brands, which is what they are, they like marketing, etc. The fans are so diehard, they will defend to death Beyonce performing for in Dubai, Abu Dhabi, and for Colonel Gaddafi. Like, they will do that. And they will be on Twitter defending Beyonce till death. And Man City fans will equally defend the Abu Dhabi owners of Manchester City for their crimes, but also because the owners of Manchester City have been very smart and they've regenerated the area of Manchester quite a lot. Apparently it's been a massive area of development. So they're being smart about it. And
so
it's
build Manchester off the backs of people who've suffered elsewhere?
Yeah.
That's
what they've done. I'm not saying it's a good thing.
Like,
it's good.
Was sent here today by the Manchester Tourism Board.
And the Abu Dhabi wing.
It's extraordinary because I've been gifted some free tickets to the Champions League final in the Man City hospitality section. So
what?
No, I haven't.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was pretending it's
what
like...
What the hell?
Yeah,
I was about
they're
to
buying
ask
our,
why we weren't coming with
no,
you.
No, they're buying... Yeah. They're buying our...
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Not another one?
It's the Politics Show podcast.
Mizzy, my boy Mizzy, who I believe is now inside. I think they've got him.
Prima boy.
Have they got him?
He's been inside many times. He's been in and out and just, you know.
Of that person's house. Is that what the gag was?
No.
So this TikTok prankster, Mizzy, filmed himself entering an unknown family's home, filmed himself like sidling up to women like late at night on the tube, sniffing their hair, being like, do you want to die?
Yeah.
Jumping on an Orthodox Jew's back on the street, trying to start fights with people for content.
and going viral. And bizarrely, it's kind of become like a Westminster story in a way I don't really understand.
Because people are thick.
Shock horror. Yeah, I mean, I saw there was a whole host of Tory MPs coming out, right, being like, the online harms bill will stop this.
Yeah.
From happening.
It's fantastic. It's like this, like if you needed any more evidence that no one reads the order paper in Parliament, like, this isn't going to do any. This is a man who's just filmed himself doing crimes.
Yeah.
This is like, it's the crimes that are criminal.
They think the problem is the content. The problem is just that he's a cunt. Yeah. That's the problem.
It's also as well, people, if he wasn't filming them, no one would catch him. So he should be posting them.
He
just documented,
like,
all his crime.
There's like some kind of like infinity loop there, where like he wouldn't do the crimes if he weren't being filmed. And
yeah, wouldn't actually.
He wouldn't be caught.
Maybe they're right.
Yeah.
Maybe it is the online safety bill that needs to be. Are we pro online safety bill?
Yeah. No.
No.
It's so inadequate.
Yeah. No. I know. I was making a wee joke.
That's the Paul Joe line.
We should get John Nicholson on here.
He'd have something to say about it. I do wonder whether there's any room for us to get MPs on here. I don't know if they've got enough. They've got enough crack, to be honest with you.
You should email sean@joe.co.uk.
Any
if
MP.
You want any MP.
Labour MPs, if you're watching, which we know you are.
Why are we doxing Sean?
His email. How did they figure that out? Oh, no.
We wish them happy birthday last week.
Yeah, it's true.
We can make you the next Darren Jones.
Wow. Slow down.
I actually genuinely went in my head, who?
Fuck's sake. I don't know. Yeah, I genuinely don't know if name an MP. Name an MP that you'd want to sit down,
have a pint with,
and have a pint with.
Like me right now, or people in Sean's.
Mary Black. Mary Black would be good.
I think she could. I think she could hang here.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. I think she'd be all right. Miliband, I think, would do okay.
Yeah,
not that classic though.
No. Well, Ed would like Tony Blair.
Tonti.
Is it current MPs?
All right.
Don't get so defensive, bro.
Also, you've got Tony Blair on the podcast. No! Absolutely not.
I hate to talk about the Sure Start program.
Is there any MPs that are permanently banned from the podcast?
Ooh, that's an interesting question, isn't it?
Ian Paisley Jr.
I don't think we have any. Okay, I tell you what.
I think he'd be quite classic. Yeah, I think he'd be a bit deranged.
The only one is Alex Shelbrooke, and that's because
I don't know who Alex Shelbrooke is.
Well, Ed.
Okay.
He didn't know who we were either. I was in the Westminster bar, and a very nice Mirror journalist was with him, and he was like, "Oh, who do you work for?" And I said, "Joe." And as I didn't turn around long enough, and he went, "What is Joe?" Very audibly. And I had to walk away in that cloud of shame.
We're still asking for answers to that question 5 years later. I tell you who is persona non grata in at this table. Gary Sandbrook.
Why?
He eats big dinners.
Because he'll eat all your dinner?
You're anti.
Do you not remember that? Do you remember the graffiti?
No, we
do, but you can't. You're fat shaming Gary Sandbrook.
No. I'm saying that Gary Sandbrook's opposition to free school meals, but his luxuriating in big dinners for himself is unacceptable.
It's not because our budget doesn't stretch.
We couldn't feed him.
Did you read the tidbit in, like, there was a tidbit a couple of days afterwards, which was like he'd been seen leaving the Parliament dining room with two boxes of lunch?
This is the problem. This is the problem. Then that's why he's not allowed here.
They're not feeding school kids. Marcus Rashford's going to have to intervene and like knock the leftovers from Sandbrook's hands.
Yeah, for sure. Do we have anything else to say about Mizzy? I think that's pretty open and shut case, really, isn't it?
It is funny. It's just like the hysterical reaction to, like, this guy is committing crimes, and he can and will be prosecuted under current legislation. And then the Conservatives are just like, well, we need more legislation.
Friend of Politics Joe, Tom Jones, wrote about this today, and he said that there's almost like a reflexive action from the government to be like, bad thing, better introduce a law, better make that illegal, better stop that right now. When, like you said, right, he's committing crimes, the law is already there. Like, we don't need to waste any more time making more laws about entering people's houses uninvited. We already have laws about that. It's either called trespass or breaking and entering.
We don't have enough police officers because Boris Johnson closed all of the police stations.
Yeah, he did. I think, as well as building 40 new hospitals, did he not recruit 20,000 or was that the nurses? I can't remember. Was it 20,000 coppers? I think it was 20,000 coppers, wasn't it?
Yeah, not accounting for those who left.
Yeah, I mean, the whole thing with that, right, it's like they've just returned the police staffing levels to what they were before the Conservatives came into power in 2010. So, big fucking round of applause
Take
for those
the successes
guys.
Successes where you can.
That's it's a good funny. Lesson for life.
It's quite funny, the idea of, like, if you if you were the family whose home was invaded by Mizzy, that you just thinking, well, there's nothing I can do. I've just got to take this. I've just got, ugh. He's well within his rights to come in here and film.
Until that online safety bill comes in.
I will be defenceless. I will be defenceless.
Thank God the Conservative government are finally making home invasion illegal.
Would you not just... You'd feel so cucked. It'd be humiliating. Do you know what I mean?
If someone, like, walks into your home.
But like then it's like filming you, being like, you fucking idiot, I'm in your house. Like, what are you going to do? Do you know what I mean?
You might learn a valuable lesson, that homeowner, today, which is one I learned in my second year of university, which was lock the front door. I was in my house one time with my housemate. There was six of us, it was just two of us in. And then I came upstairs because I heard kitchen was downstairs, came upstairs like, oh, someone's in the house. And there was. They'd walked through the open front door and I was holding... Retract that.
What were you holding?
I would not be holding a weapon because that would be a bad thing to say.
What was... But this obviously won't make the edit, but what,
oh,
what
I,
was
I
what was
I went
the
up holding a bread knife.
Oh my
fucking
God.
Yes! It's on sight! Come in my house, fuck around! You want to come in my house?
He was just like... Armed to the and team. I was like, the door was open. Never left it unlocked again.
How did that resolve... How did that situation resolve
it
itself?
He just left... It was on his
own. With a fucking Brit knife sticking out his back. He left in a fucking ambulance.
Fucking yes, Ava Santina. So
we
much
just,
respect
like,
for that.
We just beep for like 30 seconds
yeah.
and come back.
Just come back to the laughter.
There was a beep sticking out his back.
Yeah.
That is powerful, mate. I respect that so much. Well done.
It's the Politics Show podcast.
The last hurrah. Doesn't sound as good when you say it. I like it when it's on paper, but I don't know if you can read it out loud.
Is that an accent thing? I don't know.
You try it.
Harab. Hurrah. Harab.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
You what? Read it out.
Oh, because Laura, yeah.
Because we're both Scottish. Oh, yeah. We're both Scottish.
Producer Laura is Scottish.
Scottish
says things correctly.
Yeah, I witnessed it earlier today, actually, when we were recording for a special new project, as yet untitled, coming up, with a Scottish guest, and they were overjoyed to discover that Laura is also Scottish. Apparently there's few Scots in London, which has not been my experience.
No, you're surrounded by them.
Yeah, in a team of, like, five.
Two Scots.
40% Scots. Overrepresented in Paul Joe.
Yeah.
As it should be. But anyway, Dominic Raab, he's going to stand down.
Yes.
Which is, you know, a brave decision.
Yeah, he's retiring from politics at the big age of 49. And it is nothing to do with the...
That's a good 49
game. Ed just got very excited because of the 49 game.
Let's not explain that right now.
That could be a segment.
Leave it there. So currently in Esher, there is a very impressive Lib Dem candidate called Monica Harding, who we met a couple of months ago. And she lost the last election to Dominic Raab by 2,000 votes, which means it's a very marginal seat. It's right on the cusp. And she probably would have taken it from him, which would have been a joy to see.
I think the really interesting thing about this, I mean, look, he's disgraced, right? Like, the man is leaving with his tail between his legs, found to have intimidated officials. You know, he has resigned because he has been found guilty of bullying. He refused to come home from his holiday. Was it Crete?
Oh, well, it was
Afghanistan.
Beach. Yeah, Afghanistan.
But the beach was closed, so that's important to remember.
Yeah.
Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, he's a disgrace. The man is a disgrace. It's right that he's leaving politics. But for me, this speaks to a much more significant, broader trend within Conservative Party politics, which is that for all the polling, read it as much as you want, luxuriate over it. Keir Starmer's red wave is coming to Westminster.
Oh, my God. Red wave. No?
Yeah. Oh, no?
Okay, well, I really am the only woman on the podcast, aren't I?
Is that what you described your period?
No, Ed. I was not talking about that.
What was it?
No,
were you
not?
All right. Okay. I know less about women than I thought.
Okay.
Once a month, there's a red torrent.
Keir Starmer's red wave is coming, right?
And we actually just talk about a couple of those gaffes, though?
Yeah, yeah, that, please. Okay. Let's go through them.
So a really good one was when he did not read the Good Friday agreement, and he had to admit that.
Oh, yeah.
And he had to admit that. And he didn't realise when he was, wasn't he Brexit secretary when he said
he didn't realise
how reliant the UK was on the Dover-Calais crossing?
Yes, exactly. Yeah, was, yeah.
He said that the typical food bank user just has cash flow problems.
This is insane. This is like a Tory greatest hits, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's just one guy.
This is just one guy.
He is but one man, and he's just a normal man.
Yeah.
Extremely normal.
All that time he said COVID means we have to get Brexit done quicker.
Look, I had a bit of time for Dominic Raab when he was just like a swole bloke in a tight pair of shorts on the Oxford rowing team. Like, I had a lot of time for that. I had a lot of time for black belt karate Raab. I had a lot of time for that. Then once his politics started to show themselves, I had much less time.
I like the idea that you knew him in a personal capacity before he became an MP.
Yeah,
what, like 30 years ago?
The pulsating vein.
That's what I'm talking about.
You liked that.
God, yeah.
That did it for you.
Big time.
I know someone who's a civil servant in the Scottish government, and they were present in meetings with Raab and their minister. And what they said was quite like frightening about Raab was that the destruction of the Human Rights Act wasn't just some like cynical Tory ploy. It was the reason to live for Dominic Raab. They said he believed it with every fibre. It came across, he could speak about it without notes in these meetings for hours. It was his personal project. It was like, this is the stupid, we need to get it, like, which is slightly frightening.
So this is what I'm getting at. Like, frightening swole Raab, good. Frightening anti-human rights Raab, bad. Boo.
But you're also praising him for knowing the brief, which just shows how low the bar is for all of our politicians. Like, this guy came in and spoke about a really consequential bill he was putting through with no notes. He really understood it.
You've got to give him that, I suppose.
No, I'm saying we don't give him that.
No, we do. Fair is fair. He's the best politician of a generation.
After 13 years of just being slowly ground down by the Conservative Party, you hear like, oh yeah, a minister was able to talk about a bill without any notes. You're like, fuck me, that is brilliant. That is brilliant stuff. Great stuff, mate. What was I saying? No, the thing I want to say about the polling and the red wave before we went on that tangent is I don't think there's a better indicator of how badly the Conservative Party thinks it's going to do at the next election than the more than 30 MPs who have stood down before they've even been voted out. Like, it is so telling that people like Gove, who in, you know, Esher, that seat, that's Surrey, that's home counties, that's stockbroker belt. That should be true blue for as long as fucking the days are long. It's insane. And he is, instead of contesting an election, just being like, fuck it, I'm out.
Yeah. He's been worried about it for a really long time, though. That he was, like, turning up at, like, random fates on a Saturday. Turning up at random schools, and I didn't want to make it, like, you know, so, but, you know, to events at which adults could go to.
He was invited.
And then he also turned up at someone's friend's wake very randomly to offer his condolences. He's been acting very bizarrely for 2 years. Oh, and also, he's been going around door knocking. This is when he was Deputy Prime Minister. He was going around Esher door knocking. And then there was this one friend of mine who said that they didn't have a pen. They said that to Dominic, like, oh, I can't sign your bit of paper saying I'll vote for you because I don't have a pen. And he was like, no worries, I'll go and get one. Ran back down the garden path and came back with one.
Wow.
And he's been acting strangely.
Do MPs usually go to funerals? Is that something you can expect of your local MP?
I'd like to think that maybe like in Durham, during, like for a miner's funeral, the local MP would show up.
I think like a community leader.
Right. So it's not just like you can, an obligation.
Yeah, no, I think, I don't know, if my MP turned up at a funeral of a close family member, I would just, why are you fucking here? You know, you are not invited.
Yeah. To meet Politics Joe's Ollie Dugmore, obviously. As he's being lowered into the ground.
Next to Rolf Harris.
Dance on his grave.
Yeah, yeah. Like big dinners, did you?
Sandbrook has the last laugh.
Yeah.
It's Kerry Sandbrook. Spitting on my coffin.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for listening to the Politics Joe podcast. Like, subscribe, leave us a review wherever you are. We appreciate it. Let us know what you thought in the comments below. Until the next one. See you later.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.